Yeah, I mean, that's just like, you know, in the classrooms, if you have special needs students, I mean, you have, you literally, those people have like one person almost assigned to them, and it can be very disruptive for the rest of the group.
Yeah, and what we try to do in our schedule, put that person with a more advanced person that we can give assignments and be still there, you know, to answer questions, but they can read and work independently. So we try to balance it out. But, you know, really, when you look at the individuals coming to the center, I would guess that probably 80%, 75% of the people coming to the center have dual disability, not just blindness. And that's the fact of life today.
Excuse me, Jimmy Rock, let me ask, and member of the public here.
Okay.
Go ahead. You gonna say something?
Okay, so you're seeking the floor?
Yeah, if you don't object, I apologize.
All right.
Very quickly, have you thought about, it sounds like the center staff, you know, for reasons that you've outlined, is somewhat overworked given the situation. Has the commission thought about cutting down on the number of students, whatever you want to call them, that are coming through the center? Do you think that might alleviate some of the problems?
Well, it would. But then we are looking at the political ramifications, and we are paying money for 11 apartments. So I feel like it will be a waste of money if you don't serve that many clients. And when I look at the numbers in the last 6 years, steadily our unemployment rate after the center training dropped, and the reaching the goal right now, the people who reach their goals total is 91%. And the competitive employment is 65.2%. You know, that shows that we are doing something right. I mean, and I don't know, of course it will help us, but the most important that we feel is to be able to give as much to the clients and as quality to the clients as much as we can. But these are the limited resources. You know, with these limited resources, I think that's why I like the numbers, because the numbers show that we are really steadily doing incredibly. The number of clients we served in 1995 and today, we did 400% more people we serve right now than 1995.
Madam Chairman, Chairperson.
Okay, Bob.
I just wanted to say, too, some of the things that I've read in the literature strongly suggest that that a person's chances of success in reaching their vocational goals is strongly correlated to the timely provision of disabilities and services. So, you know, looking at that, I would be very, very hesitant to create a situation where we're really making people wait any longer than we need to.
Well, I have a question. The complaint I hear more than any other is that we go down to the orientation center, we have to take all these things that we don't want to take now. Does each client take all these? Do they all take shop? Do they all take cooking? Do they all take computer? Do they all take braille? Everyone's required to take all of those things?
Yes, and it is what we call, it is a full program, and that is when they come to the center tour and before, field counselors explain how it works, and what we don't want and don't do, let's say if the person comes with an incredible amount of braille skills, I mean, that they can maybe teach me. You know, I have a client like that right now. she's taking SAT exam, and she is absolutely one of the worst spellers I ever met in my life.
You haven't met me.
And even worse than me, you know, in just like that. So what we do in Braille class is we have the list of the SAT words, and also she was really weak in Braille and speak. So we focus on those. I don't start from the beginning with everybody. If they know Braille, they know Braille. There's nothing, you know, much I can do. But I can show them the Braille and speak. I can show them the Braille display. If even those are done, then they take extra travel, for example. So, yes, they go through each class, but we start them wherever they are.
Yeah, I understand that Braille and computer, they're absolutely essential to any blind person. I think they just can't get along without them in this day and age. But I'm thinking about you. I bring a newly blind lady in there, and you say, well, now this is a lathe, and this is an electric saw, and you're going to take a course on that.
Mm-hmm.
Why? She's never going to use that.
There has to be some wiggle room, I think.
Exactly. And that's what we say. When we give the tour, we say, we say to people, you're going to think that why we're teaching shop. I mean, what has got to do with blindness? You know, other areas, yeah, I mean, they can understand. And, you know, shop, really, the only area that a person can gain full confidence. Braille and computer, most people have some knowledge. I mean, most people know how to read and write, at least. So when you're teaching Braille, you're really teaching another code. In computers right now, most people have some idea at least how to turn the thing on, you know. But most of us, blind or sighted, didn't have any idea about the shop. So to accomplish something you never even dream of doing really gives incredible amount of confidence to the people. And a lot of problem solving. And that is how we teach. We teach a lot of problem solving. So, to me, it is really very essential part of the training. Although, if you look, you really can, on the surface, it has nothing to do with blind.
I accept your argument, because out in Wyoming, we used to have a blind camp, and they had saws, and they had lathes, and all. Mm-hmm. And I had more, when I was 14, I had more enjoyment working with those things, and it does teach confidence, but convince these people they need that.
Absolutely.
Good, because they come out of the center, and they're all furious that, well, I had to take cooking, and I saw no need for it, and I had to take shop, and I had to. So maybe if their counselors in the field did a little bit better training on why they're doing that, why they're going to be required to do that when they get down there.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I agree that self-confidence is a very important thing. That's what you have to teach if you're going to send them out to the public.
Yeah.
I mean, they can complain about confusion and so forth, but as we've been talking about here, life is confusing. Life doesn't go that smooth all the time for you, and you have to be adjusted to it. It's just a matter of teaching self-confidence, and if they're taught that when they go down there, that's what they're going down there mainly for. They can't learn everything.
Fatosh, on the special needs students, I guess that seems to be where the blindness is going, that it's the multiple handicap is becoming more and more common. But of the special needs, what percentage would you guess are those people are going to be capable of competitive employment versus a different standard?
When you look at the statistics, there's absolutely no difference, really. There are some people that has nothing other than blindness, are sitting and doing nothing, and there are some people that has multiple disabilities are out there and working full-time jobs. What I figured, I don't know, maybe, I've been in this business too long, but what I figured is that when I look at where they come from, what kind of a background, how old they are, what kind of a disability they have, really has nothing to do with the outcome. The outcome, everything is to do with inside. If they're motivated to be successful in life, blind or sighted, that's basically it. And if we can form an environment to motivate people and give confidence and tap into that is really the key, I think.
Madam Chairperson?
Yes, Bob?
I just wanted to say, too, that I think we are seeing more people with secondary disabilities in the OUP Center, not necessarily because there's so much, so many more today than 10 years ago, but probably more because the staff have grown in their ability to deal with secondary disabilities. There was a time when I don't think we served people with secondary disabilities very well. I do now believe that we are looking at secondary disabilities and the impact that those have as much as we are looking at blindness. We're looking at the whole person more than we have, and that because of that growth in our expertise, we're attracting people that want to go through the center.
And I think that's also true of field counselors as well. All of our staff has really grown in that ability to serve people with multiple disabilities.
There's always a tension, though, out there between, in the mainstreaming arrangement, that, you know, you're helping the special needs person, but maybe you're, you know, the tension to try and not hold back the rest of the class because the teacher's got to spend all their time with the one student. You know, I guess I didn't realize there was that the multiple handicap situation was so prevalent at the center. And I guess because you said a lot of those distractions are coming from the people with the special needs, and sure they need to be served. But I just wonder how you reconcile the, you know, giving them your extra time when, you know, then that takes away time from other people, and they may come out of it. The special needs people may come out and say, yeah, this center was great, but then everybody else comes out and says, you know, it could have been a lot better.
Well, what I look at it is what goes around comes around. I mean, when I spend time with some special needs person and there's a person that comes, maybe it is not, have, you know, school thing. I mean, we have the one person that really incredibly motivated, incredibly skilled, and pick up immediately, and we dealt with her school thing for 10 days straight. So it all balances out. One way or another, a person has a need, you know. If it is not a medical need, it's some other kind of a need. So, you know.
And I'd like to comment as well on that point, or what I think addresses that point. The fact is, the majority of the surveys that we do with people after center training, I can't tell you percent, but a very high majority are all positive, with maybe a few. I mean, we do ask what problems were there in the center. I mean, we specifically asked for some negative comments, and so I won't say there's no constructive criticism, but for the most part, almost all of these evaluations are very, very positive. But in spite of that, we do, when there are negative comments, we really look at them and we sit down again and we talk through and you know, make some little changes, make some adjustments. For example, the time from 8 to 9 that Fatosh currently doesn't have a class was, we went to that to deal with this stuff, you know, to try to, so that phone calls or situations that needed to be worked out with other staff or with employers or with a certain number of things could be handled first thing right away, and that would minimize some other interruptions. So we do. We really look at each one. If the majority were negative and just a few were coming out feeling satisfied, then I'd say we need to, you know, really make massive changes.
Is there a way, because I guess it goes back to, I think one time when I kind of short-circuited the system, when one of those evaluations came back, and it was like the person saying, everybody's picking on me, they hate me, they're being mean, I mean, blah, 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 and it was just a real cry out for, and then you read that and you say, wow.
Right.
And then, you know, I wonder if there's, when, you know, and obviously we don't need to get into, you know, who it was or what, but just some note that this was noted and, you know, some explanation or what was done, or I guess when you see that, you say, wow, you know, I assume they're paying attention and responding to that, but And I don't, you know, like I said, I mean, we certainly don't need any, you know, he said, she said, but just that this, you know, just, and I said, I'm not even sure what it would be, but just something that this matter was noted and you know, taken care of or just, you know, whatever, just a footnote to an evaluation like that, that, you know, when a person's citing, you know, lots of problems at their stay, you know, like I said, maybe just a footnote to the evaluation that you send Petosha, that, you know, because obviously you talked to Pearl about these and such, I mean, we don't need to get the full report, but just a footnote, I guess,
yeah,
as to...
Sure, and, you know, again, I do believe in values. I mean, I do believe in numbers, and that's the only way we're going to learn, you know, because we do serve the clients, and it is very important for us to know how clients feel in order for us to make changes. If we don't get those inputs, we will definitely go our own merry way and probably do things really bad, you know? So I do believe in that. I wrote that evaluation, and we didn't have any follow-up evaluations when I first started, and I begin to really start them immediately. So it really is a valuable tool for me. And usually when I get it, and if it is negative, by that time, I mean, we usually don't wait for evaluations for the things to be done. Because you can tell from people that they're happy or not happy when they leave. So I have a contact with the field counselors usually and deal with issues that way. And I always call most of the clients afterwards and I talk. I have a contact with all of them most of the time afterwards too. So by the evaluations, you know, things are usually done and I don't know, Pearl, how do you want to?
I think that's a very good idea. And when Fatosh received the evaluation, as a footnote, right on it, she could add a portion of, or basically a little report about status, what actions have been taken, or anything relevant. And that way, and she sends it then to you all and to me at the same time. That would help me as well, because then, you know, we'd know, I could read all that and then talk to her about, okay, you know, now what? What else can we do, and so on. So, and if there are still things that maybe it hasn't been completely resolved, or if there's just whatever's relevant to it, she could put on that. I think that's a very good idea.
Okay. Yeah, it'd be helpful.
Yeah.
There's a person screaming out for help, and you read something like that, and you say, boy, I hope somebody's paying attention to this. I assume they are, but...
But you're right. We don't want you just to... We want you to know we do, but we don't want you just to assume that we're taking care of things, because over time, you know, maybe that would change, and we'd become lackadaisical. Of course, we wouldn't, but there'd be somebody new in my job and Fidoja's job, and I think it's good for the board to see those evals and to bring us to task if there are things that aren't being dealt with.
Yeah, I think they're very helpful to get a sense of what people's experience is, because the training center is a big part of what we do, and we want to make sure they get the most out of it they can.
Madam Chair, this is Mary Susan.
Yes.
I'd like to ask Petosh. I know time is limited and staff is limited, but you mentioned the Braille and Speak a couple of times. Do you teach, or do you even, you know, do much with like the Braille Note or Window Eyes instead of JAWS, give people options when they go into the center?
Yes. I learned Braille Note.
I know you did.
Did you teach him, Marissa?
No, she was helping me.
Well, okay, I just want to clarify here.
Julie, our apartment resource counselor, uses Braille Note every day. So if we have a person that is going to use Braille Note or Voice Note, Julie is the one who teaches them. And I know too, I mean, pretty much most of the commands. And Braille and Speak, of course, Braille Life. In our computer area, Sahar knows both jazz and vocal arts. Window eyes, you know, up to
teach. Yeah, whichever, DW, Michael, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll just.
And that is a recent change, if
yeah.
I may add.
Okay.
Really try to have more options with the technology and to have the expertise to provide that.
Well, I'm glad to see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and absolutely. I mean, I wouldn't be stuck in one thing, you know. You know, it's definitely a choice.
Okay, was there anything else that you wanted to be sure that we heard, Fatosh? You know, I don't want to rush anybody, but we are we've been on this particular topic for about an hour now, and we really need to move along if we, you know, if we can.
I would like to ask the board if there are, if any of you have questions that remain unanswered or ideas that you haven't expressed so far.
Is it an open door policy when you're doing the class? Can anybody just come in and?
Yes.
Or is it a closed door, you know, like a more like a classroom where?
It sometimes it is closed when the shot is going on because of the noise. But other than that, it is an open door policy for every class.
Does that add to the possibilities of distraction? Does it, anybody just pop in and say hi and just kill a couple minutes with a chat? And
you know, they know better than that in our area because we don't even speak to them. I mean, they visit really specifically to get an information or set up, you know, usually it happens with either the management side or Lincoln staff, you know, coming in. And but specifically for a reason, I never seen anybody that just come here with a cup of coffee chat because we really don't have time. You know, we are all kind of rude about that. You know? there's really not very much visitation. Even during the we're supposed to have breaks, but that doesn't happen usually. So. You know what I recommend? Each of you to come and spend a day. I think it will be great for us and for you too. Just come and spend a day with us.
Be another distraction to the students.
Well, you don't have to talk. You just can observe.
I'll come in and play with the tools.
Oh gosh, watch out.
You're more than, the other thing is that we do, and I didn't mention it, but there are people from other states to come for training too. And that is incredible eye-opener and incredible for the client. So, you know, to meet from other states, other staff from other states and do that, you know. But I think it's really important for the staff and the clients to get some ideas from other states. And, doesn't happen very often, but that's what one can read into. But I really do encourage and welcome all of you and to come and spend the day.
Be the mouse in the corner. Okay, I think Tosh is finished and I've said everything I need to say. Thank you.
Well, we thank you for coming and, you know, and explaining to us how things are now. I think that that we need to continually be open to suggestions and to rethinking how things are done. The bringer of the issue didn't have a specific recommendation to us as far as, you know, what we would be doing as a result of having discussion about it, and you know, no one specifically came to, you know, to do that type of thing. That is always a little disappointing to me, because I think if we're going to make changes and someone feels strongly about doing something like that, that we do need to have interaction from people who are there on an ongoing basis or who have been there as a part of the program. I think that the suggestions that have been made about finding ways to make the load different, those points I think are well taken, and I think we do need to be dynamic in our approach to how staff positions are filled and what the a given load for a given person will be. And I do think that there is something to be said for having a position that is strictly a director of the center. You know, and that doesn't necessarily have to do with any specific personnel or anything like that, but I think we need to continue to look at how that issue works. And you know, I think that Patosh has a you know, just an incredible amount of energy that she brings to what she does and how she does it, and I think that she is good at what she does. I think that that there are things though about having one person doing in effect two aspects of that dynamic operation that that do strain it. And I think as a board, we need to be mindful of that, not only as just a personnel issue in general, but we don't want to burn a good person out either. You know, because someone is good at something doesn't mean that they can or ought to be expected to to carry that kind of a situation forever or whatever. And if there was you know, something like that happening, we need to be mindful that we don't exploit someone.
Madam Chair,
sure.
Well, one last thing. And I never take it as a exploitation. Several times the management, especially Pearl, approached me and I do love teaching and that's my passion. And if I tell you which one you choose, probably I'll choose teaching, you know? And, you know, the thing is, I do it willingly, and nobody forced me to do this. I accepted the job knowing that this board job, so the job didn't change. I'm not saying that it's loaded or whatever, you know, but it's a stressful job, but I do it really lovingly and willingly. You know, and nobody forced me into that corner either. So, and I think the reason that probably things going smoother than what it could be is because I'm teaching. Because I know the clients. You know, teaching and having a rapport with the clients is very important for the job. And I think if you're a director and stay away from the classes, I think you lose that edge with the clients. So,
yeah, that's true. Uh-huh. I would also like to add a little note about our field supervisors. I think it's important for you to know. You know, we have three districts, and each district has a supervisor. I know you know that. All of those people also carry a caseload, and that is, it is a strain for all of the supervisory staff. But it's the double edge. It truly has a real benefit of the, you know, they are doing the work that they're expecting of their counselors. They do have clients. They do keep current with what the employment issues are in the area because they have clients they're trying to help find jobs. So there are definitely strains on the people who are in our supervisory positions in the field and in the center. Because of that double role, but there are benefits as well. So, you know, in some ways, it would be good to look at all of those positions and make changes, but we, I think, you know, we really try to do the best we can by the individual, you know, so that they are paying attention to their own stress levels and mental health levels, and also to the needs of the jobs. And, you know, if we can find some ways that things can be done more efficiently or by somebody else, then either for Tosh or the supervisors, we try to, you know, make that happen. Thank you.
Okay. Does anyone have anything? Does other board member have anything you want to talk about before we move on?
I guess everybody knows that it's a concern and people think about it, and then you know, I think that's the key thing.
Okay, the next item on the agenda is the report from the chairman. And really, I think I can sum up that real quickly and by saying that we once again had to deal with the would we or wouldn't we get the budget through the appropriations process without having a cut. Now, the legislature hasn't adjourned yet, but at this point, it looks like some of our behind-the-scenes efforts have once again paid off, and we are still not having that happen. We also are, you know, on an ongoing basis, we're receiving materials and things that we need to look at and to try to figure out how we continue from here in terms of the you know, budgets and all of the things that keep the commission going. There are certainly other things I could talk about, but since I know we really want to deal with some of these issues with the plan and the budget and the rule and all of that, I'm not going to go into any of the rest of all of that, and I'm just going to move us right along into the next item, which is the executive director's report.
Thank you. Most of my reporting topics are also listed under either old or new business, but I'll address a couple of things that are not there. Did the board receive the figures this time, at a time, the caseload statistics and such?
No.
I didn't think I remembered seeing something, but I'm still catching up on my email, so okay, I apologize for that. I just thought I would give you a few basics. As of January of this year, and for the fiscal year of October 1 through next September, in the voc rehab track, we had 75 new referrals. We had 350, or we currently had at the end of January, 350 total active voc rehab clients. We've had 30 successful closures, either in status 26 or post-employment, since October 1. And our total clients served in all statuses was 404. For the independent living, we had 141 new referrals in the same time period on both of these reports. 346 actives as of the end of January. 33 who had been closed successfully. And the total served in all statuses was 365. Do you have any questions on that?
Madam Chairperson?
Yes?
I think it would be good to know, you know, or remind the commission that a year or so ago we began having people that are referred to the low vision clinic automatically apply for VR services rather than IL services as a way of establishing a match for the money that we for the money that we give them to establish mats for basic portion of the grant. So, you know, and I remember calculating last year that there were something like 70 people that would have been paid that OIB money or the older line program. There were about 70 people in fiscal year 2001 that would have been categorized as IL rather than VR. So I just wanted to say that.
I guess I need to add, we never do anything just to get matched that doesn't make some sense programmatically as well. So not to correct Bob, but to add to his point, the having application for commission services be a part of people who come into the low vision clinic in Omaha also helps to assure that those people know about the Commission for the Blind and have that connection, which otherwise was not always the case. So it really, I think, has some benefits both ways for a match, and also for making sure that people, as a routine part of that process, get really full information about who we are and what we can do.
Aren't the independent living people generally elderly?
The majority are, yes.
So the 70 that would have before gone IL now, they may still be elderly, but if not for their visual impairment, they'd probably still be working or would want to continue to still work.
Possibly. It's also possible those 70 wouldn't have come into our door anyway, because it's not uncommon for people with, you know, that are just maybe at the beginning of their losing vision to, they want to go see a doctor or an ophthalmologist or an optometrist. They want to get a low vision aid, but the last thing they want to do is walk in the door of a commission for the blind. So that's something we deal with. Okay. Then I want to tell you about a health care grant that we're applying for. It's a grant that we are seeking funds from the Health Care Cash Fund. That's operated by Health and Human Services System, and it is the tobacco settlement money that you probably read about in the newspapers. Basically, our approach, we're writing a 3-year proposal, and our focus is on diabetic education, and providing some consultants, not just at the eastern end of the state, but statewide, well, one in the North Platte area, and better services here in Lincoln, to do the kind of diabetic education and diabetic alternatives education that we already have a couple of people that do, but they're really stretched. Also, part of the first year of the grant is to have to be able to put on a diabetic workshop. About 5 years ago we did?
Three years ago.
Okay, we did provide a very fine diabetic workshop, but we don't have either the funds or the time, you know, the manpower, so to speak, to put one on every year. And what we're proposing is we'll put on a very excellent program, and it'll all be videotaped so that then that tape can be used for ongoing education of both people who have diabetes and for the medical community. And then the other part of the grant is sort of building the infrastructure of the medical community, making as many contacts as possible within the 3 years to the clinics, the doctors, the nurses, the physician's assistants, to help them understand blindness, you know, and the blindness alternatives and how people really can manage diabetes effectively themselves, so even if they're blind. So we don't, of course, know how that's going to be read, but we're working on that. Bob Deaton is doing most of the work, but then we've got a number of people that read and feedback and bounce ideas, and so it's a team that's putting together the ideas for this.
Pearl, on this subject, it reminded me of someone in Omaha had asked, said that the diabetic information, that the commission has some, but then there's another diabetic organization in Omaha that also, where people can get training. They refer to them also, but the stuff, the materials were not available, and or much, most of them, or much of them are not available in any kind of alternative format. And I don't know how much diabetic material the commission maintains, but that was a concern. And Bonnie Lund, who obviously deals in that area, she concurred, saying that there wasn't a lot of that stuff available in alternative format. And I just wondered if how much stuff the commission does maintain, and is it something that just kind of accumulated, just kind of hasn't been thought about to have that available in alternative formats?
I would say it's almost one step before that. I don't know that we have anything or very much that's actually put together as our diabetic handbook or our any little compilation of written material. I know that people have a few articles, but really, correct me if I'm wrong, most of what we have is the expertise of the people who, the buying ones, but also even our staff who know how to operate blood sugar testing and all the different tools that one needs. So it's not even in written format, but you're right, once we get some really solid materials in written format, we need to make sure that they're in all formats.
Madam Chairperson?
Bob?
Another thing too, I don't know what material you're talking about, Bob, but I suspect that some of the stuff you're referring to is of a medical nature, and really one thing that our the people we employ, the diabetic alternative counselors, cannot do is dispense medical advice. They really cannot recommend one preferred method of treatment or diet program over another. They can only